Get on the train that takes me away. Not gonna see you for a while.
Why?
It's an away game. It's an away game.
I'm coming home soon.
G'day, I'm Eric, and welcome to Home Ice here in Western Sydney, in Australia, from the Channel Eric studio. For more information about Eric to the Penalty Box, go to erictothepenaltybox.com. This podcast will bring you news, opinions, interviews, and a lot more, and a little bit of music thrown in. Our very first episode was recorded in Portland, Oregon in January 2014 at the end of a rather enjoyable night. My special guest is Sean the Pipes Norris, who is the ground announcer, or the arena announcer if you like, for the Portland Winterhawks in the Western Hockey League. Please be upstanding for the American National Anthem as performed by a US Army band. It's a little bit on the late side. I've just been out with my very special guest. Say hello, special guest.
Hello, special guest.
I really did ask for that, didn't I?
Yes, you walked right into that one. Absolutely.
Say hi to the listeners and introduce yourself and tell the listeners, why are you here?
All right. Well, first of all, my name is Sean the Pipes Norris, why am I here? That's a good question. I'm here because you invited me to say some things on your podcast, I guess, so that's cool.
And this time last week, we didn't even know each other.
Right. We met through mutual friends and just happened to get to talking about recording and podcasting and... I was at the hockey game the other night, and Eric was invited to come to the game, and we met up through some friends that were also there, and there you have it. We hung out after the game, and we've hung out a couple times since then. It's been pretty cool.
So I think I was on Twitter, and I was chatting with Quizmaster Polly. The listeners know Polly.
Okay, great.
And so it was basically put to me, hey, dude, would you like to go to the hockey?
That's pretty much how it started.
Absolutely, absolutely. Quizmaster Polly's been a great friend of mine for the last 7 or 8 years. And it's kind of fun because we have similar careers in some ways, doing performance and going into spaces and doing different types of events and that type of thing. We've kind of bonded through that. We worked for the same company for a little while. I worked for her for a little while. I've done some writing for her. I filled in as a quiz master for her when she's been out of town and those types of things. So we've had a really great relationship. And So the other day, Polly said, why don't she said, first of all, do you have any extra tickets to the game? And I said, yeah, actually, no one has my tickets to the game tonight. I am the announcer for the hockey team. I guess I didn't say that.
We'll get there.
Yeah, okay. So one of the ways that the team kind of shows their gratitude or compensates me, I guess, is I do get 4 season tickets. And so I'm able to give those to my friends and also to people. I try and reach out to people who have never seen hockey before. It's kind of a mission of mine, I guess. And Polly asked if anyone had taken my tickets that night, and I said no, and so I got her those tickets, and this gentleman right here got to go see his first ice hockey game.
And it was rather cool, and we'll get to that. But first of all, the question that I ask everyone from Portland, are you from Portland, or have you been imported from somewhere else?
I've definitely been imported from somewhere else. I'm from the deserts of Arizona, I'm sure probably most people are fairly familiar with U.S. geography, but if they're not, it's about 1,000 miles south of here, and grew up in the desert right on the border with Mexico, and there is no hockey in that part of the world, so the way I came to my job has been, it's been a long and weird road.
So at this time of year in Arizona, January, what's it like?
Actually, we have in the city that I live in Yuma, there are about 100,000 people in the city during the warm months. So between say May and the 1st of October or so. And then the population in this general area of it literally triples during the winter because of all of, we call them snowbirds, all of the winter visitors, if you will, retirees mostly, who come from the northern states where it tends to be very cold in the winter. And so they come and enjoy temperatures oftentimes, temperatures where you can wear short sleeves and that type of thing. So the weather's very, very mild in the winter.
And so you've done the opposite, and you've come to the Pacific Northwest. Why is that?
Absolutely. Well, I had a friend that moved up here in the year 2001, and I came to visit a couple of times over the next few years, and the first time I came to this city, I very quickly realized that Portland, Oregon, in my mind, is not a city where anyone should be allowed to live. They should only be allowed to go on vacation here, because this is what I consider to be my ideal place. It's beautiful. Everything is green pretty much year-round here. There are lots of, beautiful trees and flowers, and it's just everything seems to be in bloom most of the year. There's not a lot of extreme weather here. It's very mild most of the time. We do get quite a bit of rain, which of course helps everything stay green. The weather was a part of it. I didn't really like living in the hot desert, but there were several other aspects as well. One of which was definitely all of the arts and culture. And there's a saying here in Portland: "Keep Portland weird." And that kind of ethos is something that I really am drawn to and really love about this city because it's so unique.
So, how long ago did you uproot and come to Portland?
So, I moved to Portland in 2005. So, I've been here now. It was the summer of 2005. So, I guess that's 8.5 years, which it seems like it was a lot more recent than that. But it's been 8.5. This is my soul city. This is the place that I want to spend the rest of my days. And barring some exciting career things, which could happen at some point, this is probably where I'll choose to be for the rest of my life. I love it here. We'll be right back.
So we know another mutual friend of ours who we've also heard, Dr. Normal, and I joke that he's the only person from Portland that I know of who actually was, like, from Portland. At what stage do you consider yourself a local?
Well, those in the know, I guess people who have lived here longer than I have told me that I can consider myself a local. They say pretty much if you've lived here 2 or 3 years and you're not just here for school, but you've moved here with the intention of staying here, so you're not just here for a job for a couple of years or something, then you can consider yourself a local at that point, which is funny, but there just are not very many natives around. They're kind of a rare breed around here.
It doesn't seem to matter where we go. I always like to ask that question, and I'm always transplanted from somewhere else.
Right, exactly. And Portland especially, I think part of it has to do with the fact, Eric, that a lot of the time that you've spent in the city has been kind of in Portland proper, especially kind of within certain boundaries in the city, where there's a very young kind of hip vibe in the city. And virtually all of the young people that give Portland so much of its life and so much of its creativity and kind of this crazy offbeat, like you see on the television show, Portlandia, virtually all of those people are from somewhere else. And it's just a mecca for people who are young and bohemian and drawn to come and make a life for themselves. And it's where young people go to retire. That's what they say.
Now, as you said earlier, basically being on the US-Mexico border in Arizona, not a lot of ice hockey there. Tell me the ice hockey story. How did you get involved in it, and how did you get the job where you are now, where I first saw you the other night?
Wow. Well, I'm going to give you anytime I tell this story, I usually preface it by saying I'm going to make a short story long, but I'm going to try not to make a short story long here. I will try and do my best to make it as compact as possible. Dateline. let's see. 1998. I was living in Dallas, Texas at that time, and I went to college in Texas. This was after my undergrad. So I lived in the Dallas Metroplex, is what they call that area, Dallas-Fort Worth. And there was hockey fever had swept through Dallas because the Dallas Stars had just moved there, and they're in a National Hockey League franchise. They just moved there from Minnesota a few years before, and they had built up a really great team. And Dallas didn't have a lot of other really great teams at that time, and so the Stars were the big new shiny team in town, and had a great chance to win the cup every year, pretty much for a few years in there. And they did win a cup in 1999, I believe. Anyway, so this was right around that time, 98, 99. And I had some friends that had kind of gotten into that fan fever, and I started watching hockey as well. I'd never really watched it before at all. So from that time, watching hockey on TV and those types of things, I ended up actually moving back to Arizona, but I kind of kept being a hockey fan at that point. I learned a little bit about the game. I'm not a radio announcer. I'm just the public address announcer, which means that basically I'm just a big cheerleader, really. They tell me most of what they want me to say. I just kind of get to say it in the way that I want to. My biggest function is to convey information to people, and then the secondary function is to get everyone in the crowd pumped up in the arena. And so that's really what I am. I'm just a big dumb cheerleader. So
how did you get to become?
So how did I dumb cheerleader? Right. So I moved to Portland in 2008 or 2005, and I have a theater background. I have a degree in theater. I've taught theater at high school level. This this does tie in. And so I'd done a lot of plays and things even throughout my adult life, and I'd gone through a really stressful period of time. I was looking for an outlet, a creative outlet. I wanted to do a play, and so I was looking for a play audition. And as it happened, the guy at the team who ended up being my boss had done some theater in town, posted on the theater audition boards that they wanted a public address announcer for the hockey team. Now, I have no idea why someone would do that, except that what I end up doing really is kind of theatrical. So, I think they were just kind of posting anywhere and everywhere they could think of that someone interesting might kind of come out of the woodwork. And there were apparently a lot of candidates, some of whom were well-known in the local media and some of whom had been affiliated with the team before. I had never been to a hockey game in Portland before. I'd only attended about 3 or 4 hockey games in my entire life.
Hey, pretty much like me.
Right, exactly, exactly. The only thing I really knew how to do was I knew a little bit about the game, and enough, and then I knew how to talk. I knew I could, you know, you could hand me a script and I could do a cold reading of it and hopefully make it sound interesting, you know. I had kind of had a little bit of practice doing sports announcing that actually just a couple of months before that. It was just a weird coincidence, but I had my first sports announcing experience. And that was when I started kind of playing around with people's names and the vowels in their names and making them kind of sound interesting when I would introduce people's names on the PA system and things. And so that kind of led into me just going in. And when I walked into that room, into that audition, not knowing anybody, not knowing anything really about the team at all, all I can say is that they had sent me a script a couple of days beforehand. I think I had looked through it once. It was something that was more of an afterthought. I thought, oh, this might be something fun to do. This, you know, I could perform and they'd pay me to do it. That'd be great. And I had no idea kind of the significance of the hockey in the city and or, you know, the history that the teams had and that type of thing. And so I think not knowing the magnitude of it really helped me, because when I walked in, there was something about my performance that I knew it and they knew it after I had done my audition that was it, that I was the guy.
So tell me, the audition, there's a script, you've read it once, what happened, how'd you go?
So I walked in, it was the team president and vice president were in there, some of the game operations personnel were in there, the people that do all the behind the scenes stuff, the ones who are in charge of all of that, and the people who play the music that you hear in the stadium, those kinds of things. Those people were all in there. There were about, in this first audition, I want to say there were about 7 or 8 people in the room.
All these people you didn't know pretty much.
Yeah, I didn't know any of them. I think someone maybe from, maybe even one of the coaches, I think, was in one or both of my auditions that I did. But I just walked in and they asked me to basically just read through the things that were in the script, and then they asked me to kind of do some improvisation and read people's names the way that I might read them if I was, you know, in a stadium with thousands of people out there. And I did that in a room with 6 people, you know, in there. And it just was, the way that I describe it is that it was lightning in a bottle. This is... I'm not a big believer in fate or those destiny, those kinds of things, but I will say that this job just fit. It just fit me in a way that I had no idea that it would. And I'd always, every other job that I've ever had, you know, I've always gotten bored of with it, tired of it after just a few months usually, you know, and then kind of toil through it for some time. I'm in the middle of my fifth season as the announcer for the Winterhawks, and there is not a day that I go and call a game that I don't enjoy going and doing that. There's not been a day when I have just said, I don't want to do this today. I mean, it is something that I absolutely love, and I never imagined finding something like that in my life. Don't throw a kid in the right. We're at the speed of light. Don't throw a kid in the right. We're at the speed of light.
You finished reading the script, you've done your improv. What were you thinking at that stage? Were you thinking, oh, I've nailed it, or, you know, didn't really nail it? What were you thinking?
Well, it was weird. One of the things I think that they liked about me and about what I did was that I really just went for broke because I didn't really have much on the line. I didn't know the magnitude of it. So I did it big. I went big. And in theater, when you do something big, you know, it's just you go full out. Even if you're in a little room with just a few people, you can probably tell I talk loudly anyway. And going into the microphone and kind of screaming and yelling people's names like a lunatic. There was something about that, I think, that they found exciting. They really wanted to recast. The guy who had my job before I did it had been doing it for 18 years. And and they really wanted to recast the feeling of the games into more of a rock and roll type experience. They didn't want there to be long dead spaces of silence. When there's music, they wanted it to be very upbeat. When the announcer is talking, especially if something great for the team has just happened, they wanted it to be really exciting and getting the crowd whipped into a frenzy.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, please rise for the Zamboni!
Game you can name, and the Tribute to Johnny Cash, the greatest punk rocker that has ever lived. It's called The Greatest Season, about the New York Islanders winning 9 in a row and hopefully going undefeated for the whole year, but it didn't happen, and here we go. The season just got underway. We got 3 wins in a row. Not only were they victories, they didn't thinking of a winning streak, just thinking of a win. That is how our greatest season started to begin. Started mounting up, but we just kept on going. It happened at the high school level, but never in the pros. An undefeated season, the naysayers said no. I say, Steve, let's go. Could end quite happily, we're sorry, but it won't. We lost to an expansion team, some have said we choked. 53 victories all in a row. We clinched the playoffs by all-star break, we're playoff bound, let's go. Alright, here we go. One more time! On the guitar there.
If you enjoy travel, you may indeed enjoy my talk podcast, ErkPod. ErkPod is my original talk podcast that dates from 2007. Originally designed as a way for me to talk about a reality TV show, it was really my start into podcasting. So if you enjoy the tag-along experience of coming on a travel journey, with me, or merely what is happening in my daily life, check out IrkPod, which is a part of Channel Irk at channelirk.com. Let's return to the interview between myself and Sean the Pipes Norris for the second period, coming to you from Portland, Oregon.
What they saw in that room that day was not a finished product by any means, but I think they saw something they thought they could harness into something special. At least that's what... And I knew. Like I said, I knew at the end of that audition that something really amazing had just happened and I probably had just gotten this job. Part of that was just looking at the reactions of the people in the room. And you could kind of see people kind of look at each other and kind of smile a little bit. And there's that kind of just uncomfortable silence where if you're in a job interview and you're on the other side of the table, you're interviewing someone and you've got this amazing candidate that just walks in. You can't tell them that day that they've got the job, but you have a pretty good idea if someone like that that's really outstanding comes in. And so... that's what it felt like.
That's what it felt like.
I'm picturing American Idol. Whole heap of people at a desk and you standing there and, you know, how did I go? Can I have some feedback? You know, that sort of thing.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that's one of the ways that I knew was that they didn't give me a lot of feedback. There was just kind of this silence. And I didn't really know what to do. I didn't know if they wanted me to do more or if they wanted me to, you know, say more or what. And someone, you know, I'm sure remembering it, it was in my memory, it's a lot longer than it really was. But it was just kind of this little uncomfortable silence of, did that really just happen? I mean, that's the way. And so very much that kind of American Idol thing where you see someone step up on stage, and especially someone that maybe is a little bit unlikely, like the Susan Boyle, you know, that kind of thing where someone comes on stage and, okay, next, right? And then they do something that you never would have imagined. And I think for me, I think it was just as surprising. Not that I had that inside of me. I knew that I did. But I think it was surprising how well I executed it without any kind of rehearsal or anything.
So you've got the phone call. I presume it was a phone call to say, hey, you're now the voice of the Winterhawks. How were you feeling when you got off the phone?
I was driving at that time. This was right before the law came out where you were not allowed to talk on your cell phone while you were driving. So I picked up my cell phone while I was driving. And the guy said, Sean, this is Steve. Just wanted to see if you would be interested in being the announcer for the Winterhawks. And I just screamed into the phone. Because what had happened was, in that first audition that I was talking about, that had been about 3 weeks prior to that. They called me back in for a second audition, in which there were, instead of six or seven people in the room, there were about 12 or 14 people in the room. So I knew I'd made it to the, whatever the semifinals were or whatever.
Sean, you're going to Hollywood!
Exactly. I had made it to Hollywood. So, and then after that... they had told me that the guy who ended up being my boss had told me that when I came in the third time, It was training camp for the team. And he told me, he said, I'm bringing in two people and you are one of them. Can you come to training camp and call one of the training camp games like you would call a real game? Yeah. So I went to do that. And I think, honestly, I think that was the most nerve-wracking part of the process, knowing that it's you and one other person, and just trying to imagine, who is this other person? You know, is this someone, am I the patsy here, you know? Am I the guy that they've just asked to come in and do this? Because even though they know they're going to give the other guy the job, you know? And it turns out it was kind of the opposite, actually, that from what I was told by several people affiliated with the team, that they knew really early on that I was the guy that they thought they wanted. They just kind of wanted to see it again. They wanted to see me do it again to make sure it wasn't something that was just a fluke.
You remember your first game?
I definitely remember the first game. It's funny. I think I remember the fans' reaction to the first game more than I remember my actual experience in the first game. I know that I was just shaking and excited, and I do tend to get terribly anxious and nervous, but in a really energetic way. It really feeds into my performance when that happens. So I was very loud. I was very boisterous, and there were fans who had been watching the team for years that, of course, could not stand me because I was completely different from the guy that they'd known for the last 18 years. Some of them said they felt like I was just yelling everything at them the entire game, you know? Yeah. So I remember it as being really exciting. And then I remember coming home and just like kind of stumbling across the website where the fans kind of bitch and complain, if you will, about things. And really, that's what that website exists for. It's not
the We Hate the Announcer site.
Well, it's not just We Hate the Announcer. It's we're going to nitpick everything about the team, whether it's how the goalie is playing or whether it's, you know, the uniforms they wore the night before or some song that was played during the, you know, or the anthem singer or whatever. It's basically, you know, we know how to do this better than you guys do. And every team has this, so it's not just our team. And at every level of any sport, any team has this. So, and there are always those people that's how they bond. You know, they kind of bond through a shared kind of criticism of what's going on and wanting to feel important in that way. And I understand that. And in truth, I've had an opportunity over the last 5 years to have interactions with some of those people that initially posted some of those comments. And I do have to say as well, my performance has kind of become more polished and moderated itself to some degree after that. But people have come around, you know, and we've gotten a ton of new fans. It's been really exciting. So I didn't completely answer your question. You asked what my if I remembered the first game. I remember that we lost, and we played Seattle. We lost. Seattle's our arch rival, so I knew it was a big thing with that. I remember feeling like I had made a handful of kind of mistakes, some of which were the type of thing that people wouldn't even notice or wouldn't even really think about afterwards. You know, I had said a word wrong in the script or something like that. but also some mistakes in just things that I didn't understand yet about the game and about the team, and you know, pronouncing someone's name wrong, those kinds of things, which are really kind of unforgivable when it's the team that you're announcing for. So I remember some of those things, and I think that I am one of those performers that I can be really, really hard on myself at times. And so I kind of remember those things, but I do remember it being this sense of just amazing, this amazing type of performance that I had never experienced before. I'd been on stage before, you know, I'd done some short film work and video and that type of thing, television a little bit, and as an actor and having lines, and I had lines as an announcer as well, but I also had the opportunity to ad lib, and once I said something, it was said. I didn't have a director telling me, you need to go back and do that again, because it's live, you know. It's live and it's generally unrehearsed. There is this sense of just electricity when it comes to that kind of improvisational performance. You know, you watch the guys on the show, whose line is it anyway, or something like that, and just making things up on the spot. And in a lot of ways, that's what I was doing, and still do to some degree, but that's what I was doing the first few games, which just kind of making things up on the spot. And the team happened to like a lot of the things that I did. So, and there were a lot of things I did that they didn't necessarily like, or the coach didn't like, or whatever. So it was definitely a whole process of kind of getting things worked out, and then being able to kind of start injecting some of my own energy and my own bits, if you will. My own, I guess, stylistic quirks, and developing those and injecting those. That's kind of what it's been like, and it's still like that. I still think about that stuff all the time, about the stylistic stuff, and I think I just answered about eight questions in one.
That's cool. So tell me, is there a pronunciation guide for you and for other media?
There is. Yes. The teams compile, they all send in their pronunciation guides to the league, and the league just compiles them in, and as a compilation, it's nothing more than just each team's sheet stapled together, basically. The league has a lot of things on its plate. So there's no criticism of the league there at all. But it's funny because we do get a pronunciation guide. Not a lot of people in sports, or probably in anything else, are, except maybe an etymologist or something, someone who writes dictionaries for a living, is familiar. Not a lot of people are familiar with phonetic spelling and things like that. So you get people that trying to spell something out the way that something would sound actually end up spelling something that is not the way the person's name sounds. There are a lot of those kinds of little things. So yes, there's a pronunciation guide. I do usually, before each game, I go up to radio broadcasters who've been doing this longer than I have, and who also go on the road games and have seen these teams a lot more than I have, and say the other players' names, the players from the other team, they say their names all night because they're talking about they passed the puck and they did this and they did that. And I don't do play-by-play, so I only say their names a few times. So I usually talk to them before the game, if it's a team that we haven't faced in a while, and go through the entire roster and just make sure that my pronunciation of everything is correct. And with some of these hockey names, there's always something that I'm getting wrong before the game. I just try not to get it wrong during the game.
Because we've got a roster that you've provided next to me, next to you, there's not necessarily a lot of people, Smith, Jones, and all of that sort of people. There's some complicated names in there.
Exactly. So yeah, it's a lot of players are. Each team is allowed to have in our league. Each team is allowed to have two foreign nationals on their team.
We should say that's outside North America.
Yes. That is anywhere outside of the U.S. or Canada. If they have dual citizenship or something like that, then they would be considered domestic, and there's no cap on that. But you're only allowed to have two people who are foreign-born, foreign nationals on the team outside. They were born or from someplace outside of the U.S. or Canada. So on our team this year, for instance, we have one of our defensemen is Swedish, and one of our star forwards is Danish. In the past, we've had people from Switzerland, general Europeans. We've had a Russian. So you can imagine just all of those different names and of course, originations of languages, where those come from, and spellings and things. Let's blow this! Plus, Canada itself, there are all of these people in Canada who, for some reason, don't speak American. And
who would have thought?
Right, exactly. They speak some other language in some parts of that country. And anyway, they call it French, but it's a little different than what they're speaking in Gay Paris. So. I kid about that. But of course, French Canadian is a huge part of that country's culture, and parts of the country, of course, where that's all they speak exclusively. And those names are spelled and pronounced completely differently than they would be in American.
And a classic example: the opponents that we had. Listen to me. That we had this weekend.
Classic example of the
three teams that the Winterhawks faced.
Sure. So the first team that we saw was the Moose Jaw Warriors, and Moose Jaw is a tiny little town in Alberta, I believe, it's about a 2 or 3 hour drive from Edmonton, and. Then we faced the Spokane Chiefs from Northeast Washington in the U.S. And then we faced the Vancouver Giants, Vancouver, British Columbia. So those were the three teams. Was there a particular example that you were thinking of?
No, I was just thinking we've got a Canadian team and then there's two American teams and you've got all these people. You were telling me at one stage that a lot of the Winterhawks team is actually Canadian.
Absolutely. In fact, the league that we play in is called the Western Hockey League. The Western Hockey League is one of three leagues that make up the Canadian Hockey League. So we're actually in the Canadian Hockey League, even though we're in the U.S. There are five teams in the Western Hockey League that are in the U.S. There are maybe three or four other teams in the Ontario Hockey League and the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League, which are the other two leagues in the Canadian Hockey League. So we're one of fewer than 10 teams in this 60-team league overall that's located in the United States. And of course, you don't get a lot of native hockey players coming out of the U.S. Except in just in specific regions. So actually we have on our team, we have about 10 American players on our team. And that may be close to just slightly less than the total of American players that there are in the rest of our league. Seriously. And other than that, then you get the two, basically two Euros or two foreign-born players on your team, and the rest are all Canadian. So, yeah, so the bulk of our team is Canadian, the bulk of every team is Canadian, and some teams only have Canadians and maybe a Euro or two.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, please rise for the Zamboni!
Wiggy Wig.
If you enjoy travel and want to get more out of your travel, make your experience a little bit comfortable, go and check out the other new podcast on Channel Irk, Irk to the White Courtesy Phone. Travel stories, travel tips, travel suggestions, and interviews with fellow travellers. More information at channelirk.com. I actually have had a message from Sean, and he would like to apologise to both of his Moose Jaw fans after he said during this interview that Moose Jaw is actually in Alberta. It is actually somewhere totally different, but not in Alberta. So, on behalf of Sean, apologies to both of his Moose Jaw fans. Now here comes the third period from Portland, Oregon.
So where does it fit in with the National Hockey League that some people may have heard about?
Okay, so the National Hockey League is arguably, most people would consider it to be the pinnacle of hockey in the world. That's, of course, the professional league where players make millions of dollars and games are broadcast globally. So the National Hockey League has a draft every summer. After they complete their season. And they draft players. They can draft any player who's not been drafted before who is 18 years or older. So the players who actually play on our team range in age from 16 to 20. So generally what happens is the players on our team and the other teams in our league they go into the draft once they turn 18, then any National Hockey League team can draft them in their draft. So, then the team, after they draft them, unless they are just exceptionally talented, which has happened a couple of times, but it's by far just a very rare exception, most of these players are not ready to play in the National Hockey League at age 18, especially in such a physical sport like hockey is. You know, guys need a chance to bulk up, and they need a chance to build up their skills. And generally, hockey players' peak comes around probably, you know, age 26, 27, something like that, when you've got the combination of athleticism and skills built up to that point. So a lot of these players won't make it actually to the National Hockey League until they are maybe 21, 22. Some of them won't make it at all. Some of them play at lower levels and not end up making the big club. So we have about 10 or 11 guys on our team right now who are draft picks of specific National Hockey League teams. They've already been drafted, and they will go play on those teams eventually if they play well enough.
So is there an upper age limit for this competition?
There is. Players can play in this league until as long as they are age 16 to 20 on, I think it's on the first day of the season or something like that. It's some date that's picked. Then they can play in this league. So there are guys who during the season who are 20 years old at the beginning of the season who turn 21. But yeah, it's that 20-year-old is kind of the magic age. That's the ceiling. They don't allow anyone that's over that age.
So tell us about the actual team, the Portland Winterhawks. What is a Winterhawk?
Oh, that's a great question. I think other than the fact that there is a bird that is called a Winterhawk, I'm fairly certain that's not what was being referred to when they named this team. I don't know enough about the history of the team to say this with 100% certainty, but I would imagine that the name of the team actually came about after the team's logo was decided. And the way that that happened was really interesting. The team moved to Portland in 1976 from Edmonton, actually. The Portland Winterhawks did. They had been the Edmonton Oil Kings up until that point. Since Portland doesn't really have any oil or drilling or anything around here, the Oil Kings wouldn't have been an appropriate... Portland Oil Kings wouldn't have been an appropriate name. So, So they moved here in 1976. The team, after moving, did not have a lot of money. They were really underfunded. Didn't even have enough money for proper equipment and things. One of the things they didn't have money for was to buy new jerseys. But they needed, obviously, to have some kind of uniform. And so what they did was one of the team officials, I think, had a brother who worked for, was a trainer for or something for the Chicago Blackhawks, which is one of the classic hockey franchises. It's been around for, I believe, over 100 years, and is a National Hockey League franchise now. They had some jerseys that they had used, some old practice jerseys that they had used 3 or 4 years before that were just lying in a box somewhere, and they sent us those practice jerseys. They sent the Winterhawks those practice jerseys, and they feature the Blackhawk logo, which is a Native American head, or an indigenous person head logo, whatever you want to call that. And it's a very classic logo in hockey. So I think after they had that, they wanted to go with something that was sort of like Blackhawks, but yep, they didn't want to be the Portland Blackhawks because they weren't really affiliated with the team other than having the same logo. So someone at some point, I guess, came up with Winterhawks, as winter being being the season, and Hawks having some relationship to this logo, I think.
Because I don't think that would happen now, in the modern era.
No, it would not. It would not. And I do have to say that there have been a lot, especially over the last 20 years or so, there's been a lot said and done about teams that have logos that seem to be kind of culturally or ethnically, racially derived. Some teams have ended up changing their mascot, their logo, when they had some, you know, things that people considered to be offensive about them. This is one of the remaining teams, the Winterhawks, but they have the same logo as the Blackhawks. So the Blackhawks is one of those remaining teams that kind of proudly bears their logo, even though it is a, I don't want to say stereotypical image, but kind of an iconic image of what would be imagined as kind of the American, Native American Indian, if you will, a native person. The logo is definitely has some kind of war paint looking on, the logo, the head on the logo has braids, has some feathers, like a headband with feathers on it, which is kind of that very stereotypical, historically accurate for some tribes and at certain times in history, but definitely a very kind of stereotypical logo. So I know that the Blackhawks at some point did go to what they consider to be the Blackhawk Nation, which is where they got their name, which is a collection of Native tribes in that area, in the Chicago area, I believe, and went and posed this to their council. You know, what do you think about our logo? Is this offensive? Is this something that we're going to need to change? Are you going to file a lawsuit against us? You know, is this going to be a problem in the future? And after much discussion, it's my understanding the Blackhawk Nation gave their official seal of approval that they felt that it was a tribute to the nation, to the tribes, and that it was something that they could go ahead and continue to use. I know that the Portland team, the Winterhawks, that we have also been in touch with some local tribes who are not part of the Blackhawk Nation necessarily, but who were local indigenous tribes here, over here long before any of us white men were. And and they have talked to the local tribes and kind of asked that same question. And we have the blessing of the local tribes, as long as there are not other elements incorporated into that. So, you know, we don't do other teams that have used Native peoples have done. Like, we don't have any, like, tomahawk chops or anything like that, anything that would be a really negative stereotype of Native peoples. We don't incorporate any other elements other than just the logo.
So how do the Winterhawks fit in with the local Portland sporting community? How do they fit in?
So it's interesting. The Winterhawks have a separate ownership from any other team in the city. For those unfamiliar with Portland, at the top of Portland's professional sports ladder is the Portland Trailblazers, which is a franchise in the National Basketball Association. So they play in the same league as the Los Angeles Lakers and the Boston Celtics. And that's a team that's been here in Portland since 72 or something, like 1972, something like that. They have been the only major league level sporting franchise in Portland since that time. Recently, the Portland Timbers have moved from lower division to Major League Soccer or football, if you'd like, American, not American football, but Major League Soccer is the league in the U.S., the top league here in the U.S. And so now we have two professional major major teams. We as far as attendance go, and as far as I guess professionalism go, probably would be ranked third, ahead of, you know, a lot of the local colleges and universities and that type of thing. Not necessarily as far as like funding goes, but as far as just our ability to draw a fan base and I guess the public perception. I think we would be probably considered the number three sporting event in town, and we share a building with the Trailblazers basketball team. We play half of our games in the Moda Center, which is where the Trailblazers play, and then we play half of our games in the older Veterans Memorial Coliseum next door. And you had the pleasure, actually, of seeing games in both of those buildings this weekend. So we try and play as many – the team tries to play as many games as possible in the Moda Center just because it is a first-class experience. Truly, it is an NHL hockey-level experience. It's the highest level of hockey experience that you're going to have. Now, the team that you're watching, of course, is not an NHL team, but as far as the fan experience goes, it rivals the NHL experience.
Between the Trailblazers, the Timbers, and the Winterhawks, do people cross over between the three? Are there different demographics for each team in terms of fan base?
There are. I guess I would hesitate to stereotype too much, but I would say that kind of the general perception of the fans is that the Trailblazers fans tend to be fairly affluent, kind of upper middle class and above. Major league sporting events season tickets are terribly expensive. And so you can be talking about someone, you're talking about someone spending $4,000 or $5,000 a year per seat for a mid-level, you know, season ticket. So you're spending the same amount that you would spend on a decent used car every year on season tickets to go watch the team. So it's not really an experience that's accessible to the kind of blue collar fan, if you will.
So if some Australian guy was just to walk in there, he'd probably be sitting way up the top or not even be able to afford to get in.
Sure. I guess the ticket range for one of their games probably starts at the low end at maybe $30 or so up at the very top of the arena. And then it goes all the way up to courtside seats, which, you know, if you're sitting right there next to the court, are going to run you $1,200 or something like that per seat. So
to quote Sabrina Miller, $1,200!
Exactly, but these are the same seats that, for instance, if you're watching the Los Angeles Lakers on television, that's where Jack Nicholson sits, you know, are those courtside seats. So they're very visible, and there are definitely people in the community who can afford them. But I would say that's kind of that's the only really negative thing. The Blazers are a great, great asset to the community. They have been kind of the face of the community as far as sports has been concerned. On this major league level, the only thing is it's just really hard for the average fan to be able to afford to go to more than maybe one game a season or something. The Timbers tend to be the Timbers have really caught the imagination and the kind of excitement of what I was talking about earlier, the younger transplanted people who have come in from everywhere, who keep Portland weird, who, you know, are the young creative professionals who, you know, work, you know, or maybe baristas or whatever. Yeah, yeah. But basically, the Timbers, they did build a new stadium. It is a first class experience as far as soccer is concerned. It's, you know, it's, you are not going to find a stadium as nice as that anywhere outside of maybe, you know, the Premier League in Great Britain or something. Certainly not in the U.S. It's the finest facility in the U.S. Because it's brand new.
So roughly what would I be looking at to get a good ticket there, roughly?
The only thing about that is, for certain games, you'd be hard-pressed to get a ticket. Those games are almost always sold out, and their season tickets have sold out in advance, and there's a waiting list for those. If you were to walk up to the box office, and if there were tickets available, the range of prices on those probably goes from maybe $10 to... you know, I'm sure some of the best seats would command, you know, maybe $200 or $300 a game, something like that. So considerably less. You know, you're talking about what, 25% of the cost of a professional basketball ticket.
Yeah.
So it's considerably more affordable, and definitely has kind of caught that young, more creative and more blue collar demographic as well. And the team has really gone after an adult market. The team has really sought to kind of create a more European style football experience than what has been done in the U.S. much before. And in that, they have a rabid fan club, and that stands up during the entire game. And we're not just talking about a small section of people. This is three or four entire sections of the stadium, consisting of probably, I don't know, 1,500 people, 2,000 people, something like that, who stand up every single game. And those are season tickets that are purchased in advance, that you can't even get into those sections if you're just going up to the box office to buy a ticket. So the fan base is rabid. That's really the word for it, and I use that in the very best sense. We would love to have a fan base like that at the Winterhawks. And part of the way that they're able to do that is, like I said, creating a more adult atmosphere. So the fan club, they sing songs throughout the game, some of which tend to be a little bit rowdy and randy and those kinds of things.
That is full time for episode 1 of Irk to the Penalty Box. Hope you enjoyed our chat with Sean the Pipes Norris. He is an absolutely outstanding guy. Him and I have been in contact since that particular interview. The Portland Winterhawks, by the way, made it all the way through to the playoff season. They were the conference champions for the US conference. They were also the Western conference champions, but unfortunately they were defeated by the Edmonton Oil Kings. Quite ironic, considering that the Portland Winterhawks were originally the Edmonton Oil Kings. They were defeated in the championship season for the WHL, unfortunately. But on next episode of Irk to the Penalty Box, you will hear more from Sean as we talk a little bit more about the mechanics of what happens on game day in terms of being an announcer at a major sporting venue, such as he does for the Portland Winterhawks. Our Zamboni break music came courtesy of the Zambonis and used with direct permission. During the first Zamboni break, we heard Here Comes the Zamboni, The Hockey Song, and Greatest Season. During the second Zamboni break, we also heard Zamboni Drivers Local Union and Hockey Week. Our in-period music came courtesy of Smoke and Mirrors. Smoke and Mirrors are a female-fronted rock band from the central coast of New South Wales. If you enjoy music such as that, I do have a series of music podcasts that you can also find at Channel Urk called Urk FM. Urk FM Australia features Australian music each and every Friday on Urk FM. Find all of this via channelurk.com. Smoke and Mirrors have been together for several years. They have had a steady lineup. They have performed up and down the east coast of Australia and are an absolutely awesome rock band. The songs that you're about to hear in full as you make your way away from the stadium for the evening, Set to Ignite and State of the Mind. Be safe, keep your stick on the ice, and I will talk to you soon here at the Penalty Box, actthepenaltybox.com.
Don't. your thoughts are pretty.